Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you very much for joining us. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and with me, as always,
it's Ben Vanell here, Tommy. In a world where if you walk the streets of Melbourne or many cities around the globe, you will see nothing, you will see no activity whatsoever, but bizarrely, the world of video games has been more active than ever before. There's a fuckload going on in video games. And I went for a drive today, if you couldn't tell, and looked around and was like, oh, it's like the end of the world, hey. And then played video games for like 3 hours. There's so much shit to talk about, which feels bizarre currently. A man who always feels bizarre, it's Adam Knox joining us, the third co-host.
It's me. It's cool to find out that Ben writes all those recipes on the internet where they just start with a seemingly unrelated story.
You know, I was walking down the street the other day and I thought, oh, fish. Where does fish even come from? So I looked up the origin.
That's the start of
I used to
of,
work at a warehouse. And one day, my boss asked me if I was stacking V's, referring to boxes. But I thought he said mac and cheese. My recipe for barramundi.
I get very annoyed by the start of the Monster Mash. I'm like, shut the fuck up about the fact that you're in the lab working late and just tell us about the fucking monsters that are in the song. Get to the point.
Yeah, that's
too
true.
Much
no
prelude.
Other, no other song about the dance is like, I found out about it at a friend's house. Do the hustle.
Yep. Big week of releases, lots of stuff to talk about. There was a bit of news during the week. There was another Super Smash Brothers fighter reveal. These are still being churned out, and there's still another four to come after this. Just an insane amount of post-launch content being added to this game.
This is the group as well where, like, and it kind of makes sense now, where I remember Sakurai was like, by the way, Nintendo has already made all of these deals. They've told us which fighters are going to be in these next six. We haven't picked them. These are all Nintendo's choices. Hope you enjoy down the track. And this week, I can see why he was like, by the way, these aren't my friends. I don't know who these guys are. Yeah.
This is a cross-promotional deal to help strengthen the bonds between Nintendo and Microsoft.
Yeah.
Not an artistic choice at all.
Yeah, or in the case of the last fighter, to strengthen the bond between Nintendo's audience and a game that people had probably ignored because they had a fighter from ARMS in it, which definitely seemed like a bit of like, hey, you know, give this franchise a bit of love. We need to like
bring
remind
your little
people
brother
that it exists. And
if you're going out, you got to take your cousins with you.
Yeah. Ironically, though, as much as this new one, the Minecraft one, Steve, is meant to be, you know, a cross promo thing, I've seen people saying like, well, I'm not playing Smash anymore. Because it just seems like a dumb, bald-faced corporate choice. I mean, I can't say that it affects me either way, but I think, Tommy, you're still probably the most tapped into Smash. What do you think about this cunt coming in?
It doesn't even strike me as like super cross-promo-y. I mean, that side of it, I think, is cool in the sense of, you know, we all grew up around the same time playing video games, and so the idea of the like characters being, you know, across consoles and stuff like that was just such a, you know, foreign idea. You picked a camp and that was it. You had your Mario, you had your Sonic. And, you know, the fact that we now live in a time where companies can cooperate with each other in this way, and especially in the case of Smash, I think it's cool. I didn't really know what to expect heading into watching this video because there's already so many characters in this game. There's so many big ones that people wanted for a very long time that it truly was like, well, who's left? Who could it be? And, you know, I saw people on the internet say, oh, maybe someone from Overwatch or someone from Minecraft. And, yeah, all of those possibilities were pretty, like, very, very unappealing to me personally. I watched this live and it, you know, started as they all do with a very stylized trailer, kind of pre-rendered little scenario. And, you know, you then in the course of that, it's revealed who the fighter is, and the minute it became apparent that it was a Minecraft character, I turned it off. it just seems so, for a game that already has so many different licenses and characters and worlds come together in it, this just feels so tonally off. Like, it just feels like it doesn't fit, which is is insane to say for something that has like 100 characters in it already, but there's just something about it.
I guess so. But, like, I mean, the fact that this game has, like, Marth and shit in it, you know? Like, for people to be like, I don't care about this character, but Roy was fine by me. So, well, okay. But yeah. It does, the Minecraft, it's Steve and then also Alex. I don't really know. I guess the default guy is called Steve.
Right.
And I don't know who Alex is, but they're the Minecraft lucky people.
Yeah.
And they look weird because they just look like they're copy pasted out of Minecraft. They're exactly those blocks. There's no sort of the cartoony Smash Brothers style applied to them. They just look directly like they've been pasted in there, which I think is maybe part of why this is so weird, because it seems like it hasn't been adjusted to fit in. It's just been plunked in there. But it seems like the moves and stuff are kind of cool. Like, if you love Minecraft, which we're probably not in the age bracket to have an attachment to that game, but people who do, it seems like they're doing a good job with this character of, like, you know, he fucking mines shit.
And then he crafts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He crafts afterwards.
That's his smash move. His special smash move is the crafting bit.
I just find the look of these characters in this game is just unappealing to me personally. So that's a big part of to do with my problem with it. But I have seen a lot of people online very stoked that this is included. It is such a big franchise that it feels like, and yeah, what's left? What's not in there? Like, it does make a lot of sense. And to
that's the thing. Like, when you're up to character number 770, when it's like when you've done Ryu and Ken, I think. All right, you, it's fine. Put in whoever. Yeah. There are other Microsoft, like the guy from Cuphead or whatever, might have been cooler if it was going to be a Microsoft thing for us. But yeah, it's fine. Anyway, sorry, I cut you off.
Oh no! I was just going to say one other thing.
we're adjusting to doing this over Zoom. It's fine.
Yeah, it's only taken literally 6 months.
I think more. It's fucked.
Yeah, God.
The funny thing is, though, you say that they seem like they were just jammed in. It's kind of the opposite, because I don't know if you saw this not long after. I think maybe in this video, Sakurai mentioned this, that they had to go back through and tweak every single level that is in the game to work with these, because you can like dig through the levels as this character.
Oh,
so they've
had
to go back through the entire game and sort of slightly rework every level to work with this character. And, you know, it does feel a bit jarring, and it does feel, you know, it's not to my personal taste it being in there, but you do have to admire the level of commitment and artistry that this team has to go, no, you know, we're going to make it work and this is important to the game. So, yeah, it must have been a pretty daunting task to have to go back and do all that shit to make it work.
And it's kind of funny for this game to be reaching the sort of level of like those weird Flash games where it's like Goku versus an Evangelion. Like, if Smash Brothers ended up at that point where it's like, all right, I'm playing as fucking Tony Danza, like sick.
Yeah, versus keep going. The little red toaster or something.
Yeah, yep. This is the first chip away at that block, if you'll excuse the fucking pun, into making this like...
Can we drop him from this call? Can we drop him?
Nah, this is my
he
call.
He started it. I don't think he can. We can, yeah.
Fuck.
You can leave. I'll finish this off on my own. I'll do Minecraft puns for the rest of the day.
It's better for us to stay.
I'll do another one.
Do nothing, evil men triumph.
Do you want to hear another Minecraft pun? I could use one more notch in my belt. Oh.
I don't get that one. I don't understand.
I wish I had a pickaxe to smash myself in the head. Yeah, he's Notch. He's the guy. He's the bad guy, right? Notch. He did some bad things.
I don't know what's up with him, but I think he's a maybe little weird on Twitter type of guy, but I don't actually know. That's just from the back of my memory, which is the most reliable part.
Are we done with this Steve guy? Because I just remembered a news story.
Yeah, I don't think it is what it is. Who cares? It's Smash Brothers. There's going to be a million characters in that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not for me, but it like someone saying they were going to turn the game off and not play it anymore because of this. It's like it represents like one hundredth of the overall game. So, this seems like a very weird, out of the box character choice. And then you remember they've still got four more. For fuck's sake.
out of the blocks.
Yes. Yes.
Then you remember they've got four more characters to add. So it's like truly who the fuck else are they going to put in here? I don't know.
And Nintendo partnering up with Microsoft got us Banjo-Kazooie, right? So the chickens are coming home to roost and this is the price that you pay.
That's a good point. Yep. It's a very good point.
Thank you.
it is not the most bald-faced cross-promotional tie-in that they could have used. Apparently the next four are the Xbox Elite Controller, the Xbox Series X, the Xbox Series S,
one more.
And Master Chief. We're all playable characters in Smash from tomorrow. It's an amazing... the thing I just remembered made me have to eat my words... Just 7 days after announcing my...
Donald Trump will never get COVID. But now...
The other character being added into Smash is just the phrase, Trump has COVID. That's the next
That would make me stop playing it. Yeah. To be fair, I guess I can see how the Minecraft people feel.
So Genshin Impact, a game that I was talking about last week, your brother Nox had been playing it as well, put a fair few hours into that one. And I had sort of still been looking up some reviews and stuff the past few days. I saw a lot of people saying stuff like, oh yeah, if you want to play this game, you might as well, hand your address over to the Chinese Communist Party and, making a lot of semi-racist comments about a video game that is made by a Chinese company.
And you know what? They've got it. Don't worry. Right. Like, it's too late for that.
Yeah.
They hacked fucking Sony. Remember that when they hacked Sony?
Absolutely. They bought it off Facebook in a legal transaction.
Every government in the world has it. Don't forget about your privacy and shit. Like, it's too late.
And so I was like, this is like the second Chinese game I think I've ever played knowingly. And it was like, it's cool. It's a bit of a ripoff, but
What was the first, and how many do you think you may have played unknowingly? Those are two questions.
The first is Cruel Band's Career is the first. I looked at the Wikipedia page and was like, this is a Chinese developer. As for unknowingly, boy, I mean, could have got it under the radar, China style.
Hey, you don't see video game race, and I respect that, dude.
Yeah. You put Ridge Racer in front of me, I can't see anything. Yeah. It's just a blank screen.
Whereas me, on the other hand, when I'm buying the game at JB Hi-Fi, I'm at the counter saying to the guy, no, but like, where is it from? You know what I'm asking.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I'm buying Genshin it in Impact. Melbourne. Huh.
That's an interesting name. What's the...
Can you spell what that?
Where are your parents from, Genshin Impact? Where are your parents from? And then, all of that going on inside my head. And then today I read Genshin Impact has censored the words Hong Kong and Taiwan from its game. You can't write them. It's not obviously in, you know, the game's text, but if you're in multiplayer, you can't type those words out.
Right.
I mean, that's set in Taiwan.
Wow, this is just like Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And like, that would be a Chinese government stipulation, right? That isn't the developer's choice.
Yes, I think it's also that. But I think coupled with the fact that I think people already are starting to just associate the word or the country China with, you know, the Communist Party, it's like, oh, this isn't helping. But you're right, like, this is an issue with international politics,
right?
With video games.
And at some point, like, you know, all my clothes were made in Bangladesh and in the wrong circumstances. Every other video game is either made in the US or Japan predominantly that I play. So, and you know, the US government more than the Japanese one have issue. Like,
yeah.
If you choose to look at anything in the world, you can blow it up to the point where it is not okay to do.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's starting to feel a bit like we're in, 1963 Cold War, where anything Russian, you know, is demonized. And it's like, well, most of the Russian people weren't, Communist Party spies. It just feels like this weird thing that seems to be like hanging in the air around video games. Because China, I think, is, you know, trying to increase their, you know, output of video games. Culturally, they want to be involved. And we're starting to butt up against this sort of thing.
And you get with video games, in my observation, two very strongly opinionated groups on either side of the spectrum where everything is political and anything that you touch has political ramifications. And then the other side is like, shut the fuck up, leave it alone, it's just a video game, fuck you. Mm-hmm. Now, me being a little bit smart, I land in the middle. But like,
okay.
No, I don't know. It's a really complicated fucking thing to reconcile in the modern world, especially when you have all this information about the circumstances under which things were made and the governments under which those circumstances exist. Mm-hmm. It's tough to know what the right thing to do is in any situation ever. Mm. So, yeah. It's made $50 million at this point, I saw.
Yes. Yeah, it's done well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So haters, back off.
That is interesting that it's made that much money when a big part of your review was that it's free to play and that it in no way in your experience. And this also was echoed in the Facebook group during the week of other people listening who've played it, that they've found it very easy to get a considerable amount of the way through without ever having gotten close to spending any money at all. So for it to make that amount is, I guess that's just people that are loving it and are prepared to sink that money in are just hammering it, presumably.
Yeah.
Well, when you give people the choice, actually give them the choice of whether they give you money or not, people are more likely to, I think, at patreon.com/filthycasualspod. It's up to you. You don't have to.
I this is embarrassing, but I've been playing Candy Crush and I've... I paid some money into it.
Yeah.
I paid some money to get some fucking lives. It's just, you know, it is the same philosophy, right, of that addictive gameplay, which is good and it makes you want to play it more and it locks you out at some point. Now, I don't think Genshin Impact is locking you out of the game at any point. Maybe it's gating your progress, but yeah, I paid like $3 to play Candy Crush for a little bit longer.
And like, you know, everyone does
that a couple times. Yeah, it's one of those things where when you're not in front of it, it's easy to go, fuck, that's dumb. Why would anyone do that? And then when you're in the zone, you're having a good time, you're on the train, you're killing time, you're like, $3 to just play for another like hour. That's nothing.
And if the game hangs back on, you know, forcing you to pay on stuff, then it's much more likely to be there when you are in the mood to do that. Versus pushing you away immediately by being over the top about it. So it sounds like Genshin Impact. Yeah, it's weird to talk. I don't know. It's so strange to think about. It's cool that the game does seem to be separate from the monetization of the game. And it makes the monetization of the game seem more palatable because it's separate. Right. Like even the battle passes and shit and like a Call of Duty, they grate a little more on me because, I mean, they're all superfluous things that you get from them and it doesn't really matter, but they're so front-facing and they're so there all the time. There's always a little highlighted push why for this. Like, it pushes me a little bit away from the free part of the product or the part of the product I already bought, at least.
Right.
So yeah, I guess what I'm saying is patreon.com/filthycasualspod. I guess that really sums up what I'm trying to say here.
Oh, we should actually mention it. We should have done this at the start of the show, maybe. We're starting a new, well, we've started a new series on Patreon, The Filthy Casuals Guide to Life. Each episode is going to be a big theme. We did comedy already because that's the most important aspect of life. And we got it out of the way first. But we're going to do, like, I think travel and dating and cooking and very, you know, big, broad topics, and we'll just sort of pick them apart and tell stories and maybe go through some other people's advice and rip it apart and just have a bit of a gab. It's been fun so far, and people seem to like the first one. We got a little earnest about our own comedy careers and stuff, and people seem to be into that. But it's a good time to jump on Patreon because there's also about 100 previous episodes where we just talk about movies and music and stuff.
And the video game book club before that too. There's a bunch of shit on there. But just a fun little mini series for a bit here. Trying something out. See what you think. Hey, let us know. Eh? You don't have to though. $3 if you want to keep listening to the podcast though. You can wait 24 hours.
But should we move on from news stuff to games? We've been playing games
well,
this week.
Speaking of free-to-play games, something that came out in the last week that is free-to-play, provided, of course, that you have a subscription to Nintendo Switch Online.
I was about to correct you there.
Yeah, our fact-checker was about to jump in.
I pushed my imaginary glasses up. I'm the only one who's not wearing glasses, but I pushed up my contact lenses, jammed my finger into my eye. A nerd wearing contact lenses correcting someone going like, actually, fuck.
That's awesome. The great evolution of the actually guy.
I think you can hear it squishing. Anyway, it's on for a limited time only.
Yeah.
On Nintendo Switch Online.
Get your jollies off between now and March 31. Super Mario Brothers 35. It's basically the original Mario Brothers game reimagined as a battle royale where you play through the game. Every time you jump on an enemy, a little ghost version of that enemy shows up on someone else's screen. You're playing against real people. You're playing against 34 other real people. And you basically just have to survive as long as you can. You've every 20 coins that you get, you can do like a random item box thing, sort of similar to how they are in Mario Kart, where you may get a fire flower or a mushroom or something of that nature, which is very helpful if you're small Mario and you're on the cusp of death. I played a few rounds of it the other night and I found it fun. I came second in one, which I think is maybe the best that I've ever done in any form of battle royale game ever. So
arguably,
I certainly
coming second should always be the goal.
Listen here, buddy.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can take that one to the bank.
This is a bloody family podcast, all right?
Oh, is it? Jesus.
Yeah, and I'm saying the kids have to learn sometimes, so good on you.
Happy to help.
I did think it was weird that when I finished second, Luigi came up on the screen and said, "You may not have gotten the crown, but I can tell you're a real ally. Nice, brother. Really good stuff." That makes a lot more sense now. I hadn't really thought of it in those terms. Yeah. But,
can you just, because I haven't played this, I don't have Nintendo Online. So you like start a normal level and you're just going through the level. What is the, so if people are jumping on enemies in their own other parallel levels, what's happening? What is that? Are they coming into your level, making it harder? Is that what it is?
They pop up. So if someone's like targeting you, it's similar to Tetris. It's almost exactly the same as Tetris 99, where you can pick people to send them to. So you can either go, hey, send them to people who are attacking me, send them to a random person, send them to a few other options, and they'll show up as little ghostly gray versions of those enemies on your screen or on theirs, depending on, you know, where they've gone to, obviously. And if you jump on an enemy that's been sent to you, you get extra time. You've got less time than in a normal Mario game. And it is just Mario Brothers 1. Like, it starts from level 1, or you can start it later if you want, and then you potentially play through the entire game, but with heaps more enemies in a similar way to Tetris 99, where instead of blocks, it's enemies. And I've got to say, this is not very fun.
I mean, Super Mario 1 is a classic, but even just playing it again, you know, it's fine, but it's not hugely engaging, especially if you've played it a million times over the years.
And now imagine if playing it was really annoying. Because people keep sending a bunch of fucking Goombas and Koopa Troopers and shit to you. And it just, the type of game that Mario is, it doesn't really work in that same way as Tetris, where Tetris is such a natural kind of mechanical game that you can really focus on the tactics around what you're doing a lot more easily, in my opinion, than with Mario, where the specifics of timing a jump and having the muscle memory built in of what Mario 1 is like and then having to fuck with that is kind of interesting in the same way that Mario Maker was, but also bothersome. I just found it irritating to play, kind of. Like, I didn't feel like I was super in control of what I was doing tactically to other players, and I didn't feel like I was enjoying it as a platforming game. So, it didn't really hit for me, and I don't care anymore that it's being deleted.
I mean, I had a good time with it. I spent 2 hours, and I definitely got sucked into that thing of, you know, you finish 11th or whatever and then go, oh, okay, you know what, I'm going to have one more go because I reckon, you know, I just want to try and get number one. I enjoyed it. I like that it gets progressively more and more chaotic. If it's a game that you've played dozens and dozens of times, by the end, you know, the further on you're getting, your screen is more and more and more dominated by enemies. I think you don't get any kind of effect or advantage if you hit the enemies with a fireball. So you know, even if you do have that, I think you're still motivated to actually kind of defeat them in the more difficult way. But all of that being said, I haven't touched it since that first session, and I doubt I ever will. I enjoyed it. Like, I really enjoyed it, but I'm not feeling myself like pulled to chuck it on every day or anything like that. I think it's cool that they tried it, and I can understand a lot more now, having played it, why it is a limited thing. I think it's just this kind of doesn't really fit into this format. No. But hey, we want to do something different and weird and fucked up to celebrate the anniversary. So, like, hey, what about we just, like, throw this together and put it up there for a couple of months? Like,
it feels more like, you know, they'll do, like, an event in Fortnite that's a time-limited thing and it changes the gameplay or whatever. It feels like that, but for Tetris 99. Like, jammed this weird thing in here for a little bit to celebrate Mario. And just it's cool in the same way as the Tetris 99 was, but Tetris is more fun to play than Mario 1 with too many enemies. That fun to just be jumping more. It feels like a really bad Mario Maker level where they've just, some kid has gone, put 100 Goombas in. You're like, fucking learn a clue, kid. Get an idea, mate.
Well, Tetris is already inherently about survival and, you know, Mario Brothers is about progression. Like, it's about trying to make it further and further on. So they're, it's just a completely differently formatted thing. But, like, yeah.
And the way that this works is hinders your progression in an annoying way with Mario, and Tetris increases that feeling of survival. So that makes heaps of sense.
These two work
in different ways.
Yeah.
But it's free, so, like, give it a go and maybe it'll click with you.
So a game that was not free but was cheaper than a normal game. This was only like $50. Hell, this is not a full price game for some reason. Star Wars Squadrons. We all got pretty excited when this launch trailer dropped. What was it, like a couple of months ago? It wasn't announced ages ago.
Like E3-ish, when that would have been maybe time.
Yeah. It's exactly what it says on the tin. It looked like at that time a fun revival of space dogfight games without a huge amount of depth and a multiplayer focus. And, hey, that's what it is. But I'm really, really enjoying it. I like these kind of games. I've liked them since Wing Commander, you know, playing that on 8 floppy disks, you know, on a 386. I'm a big fan of No Man's Sky as much for the flying around in a spaceship as the all everything else. And I don't think there's been a really tight, simple, easy to play, just, you know, polished version of this game for years. There's been, you know, indie developers trying to do stuff. I think it's, is it Rebel Galaxy or something? is like something that I've been recommended before and didn't really grab me, but this has the polish that a Star Wars game would have, and they've done a really good job with it. Cool. It sort of dumps you into a storyline very similar to Battlefront 2, where you play as an Imperial person and sometimes you play as a Rebel Alliance person. Mm. You fly around in your X-Wings, your TIE Fighters, your Y-Wings, your A-Wings, your other kinds of TIE Fighters.
Yep. W-Wings, H-Wings.
W-Wings, yeah.
B-Wings, I think there are actually B. Oh, nice, yeah.
Buffalo wings, yeah.
Telephone wings.
Blue cheese sauce leader.
Wedding wings.
Oh! But yeah, it's super slick, super polished. It dumps you straight into the story to get you used to the controls. The controls are very good. It's basically like the left stick is roll left and right and throttle back and forth. The right stick is basically look. Yes.
Just quickly, just to warn you, Knox has got that look on his face.
I know.
Just thinking of other wings that he can trot out.
I've had to barrel forwards, but I can see the cogs are turning. And he looks stumped, if I'm honest.
He's got his phone out. He's doing some Googling. What are other things that have wings?
have a little faith.
Patrick Ewings.
Yeah.
I had to look up whether or not that was the name of someone I knew or a famous person, because I knew I had the name in my head, but he's an American basketball coach.
Yeah, played for the Knicks. He used to play
he did.
For the Knicks. He was great.
He's tall as hell.
Yeah, Patrick Ewings, was worth it. Was worth stopping down, waiting for that Google search to load.
Anyway, I'm sorry. Can you repeat the last 5 minutes? I wasn't listening.
But yeah, the controls are pretty intuitive. It's throttle back and forth on the left stick. Right is look around. I don't know if you guys would have this because you're maybe not as big a fan of these kind of games. I was sort of used to the triggers or the front triggers as sort of roll, you know, like barrel roll. I think maybe Ace Combat, it was like that. So the roll and the throttle being on the left stick is still taking me some getting used to. I've been playing it for a couple of days and I'm still not quite fully to grips with the controls. It's not quite second nature, which you kind of need for a game like this, right? Like it's all that sense of control. But like, fuck, it really feels fun. The like variation of loadouts is great. Like you can really customize what you're going into each battle with. The ships have different feelings to them. You can change like your engine types and your hulls. Like you can really like make the ship for you.
Mm.
The story seems pretty simplistic and there's not like, you don't like walk around, you know, like every in between missions thing is like, you're just like looking at a diorama and it's like, click to talk to this person, click to talk to that person, get your briefing. Which I think, you know, it speaks to this being a lower priced game and a lower budgeted game. But yeah, fuck, all the missions flying around are super fun. I dipped into the multiplayer last night and it's great. I always rated the Battlefront 2 multiplayer the highest when it was the dogfight stuff, because that was just, I don't know, just more fun. You're not just doing like a Battlefield style running around a map and shooting people. And I mean, yeah, fuck, it's still fun. The only issues that I've seen around are that there's some bugs, some graphical bugs and like AI bits of like, that ship has just stopped. Like I had to reload the whole game in one story mission because like the guy who was supposed to be leading me just wouldn't move. So
imagine a bloody an ineffective leader standing in the way of progress. Like I said, sometimes politics ties into the rest of the world. It takes a certain mind to notice these moments. Anyway, please continue. Onion wings.
Yeah, you know, actually, Darth Vader has trouble breathing as well, right? So that's even more funny in retrospect.
Blow up Tatooine, vote! Yes.
But yeah, fuck, apart from like these little minimal techie issues that I think are even more prevalent on PC than the consoles, I can't really fault it. It's super cheap. If you like, it did intend to buy a physical copy, which got delayed, you know, for obvious reasons. But like, you can get it for under $50 Australian, which is crazy for a really good, solid package of a game. And the multiplayer is strong enough that it's kind of, there's no end point, you know? Like, the story mission might be, you know, short, but the multiplayer goes on for fucking ever.
This is also on EA Play, which is going to be on Xbox Game Pass on the 10th of November too, so I'm kind of hanging out for that to give it a go.
Yeah. And yeah, depending on what you're already paying for, it's on PC. PC Game Pass also has EA Play wrapped into it as well?
I think they all do, yeah.
Yeah. So there's going to be a huge player base for it. Matchmaking's been fine, like all of that shit, you know, which can be an issue with multiplayer. Even day one, day two for me was fine. So, yeah, I mean, if this looked like a cool game to you, you like the dogfighting stuff and space piloting stuff of old, this is a great version of it. I recommend it. This is a buy from Ben.
Wow, an official Ben buy.
That's it.
We haven't had one of them in ages.
That's it. And on that note, as is tradition, I have to say goodbye. And that's me out of this episode.
Every time Ben likes a game, he immediately disappears.
He's checked out. Boy, he sure does like a lot of games, and he's often pretty keen to get the review out within the first 5 minutes of the ep so he can fuck off and do something else.
Wow.
I'm just so tethered to the meanings of words that when I say this is a goodbye, I have to leave. It's just, you know, I'm just a literal person.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, we got a Ben bye. I wonder if we'll get a Tommy totally get this episode as well.
A Tommy went.
Yeah.
And an Adam, video games don't matter.
This week I've been playing Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, which is a sequel developed by the people who made the remakes, the relatively recent remakes of the first trilogy, and they have, I guess somewhat arrogantly, chosen to decide that none of the games that they didn't remake exist. They've just decided to insert this in and pretend that there's not, what, like five after Crash Bandicoot 3 or something like that?
Something like that. But to be fair, that wasn't necessarily so much their choice as it's the choice of everybody who has lives in the world. Like, almost everybody forgets that those existed, maybe didn't play them. I'm sure they have their fans. But especially when the whole thing this game is doing is pushing that nostalgia button, this is the right move to call it four. Like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5, remember that? And then that turned out amazing.
So I've spent a few hours with this now, and it's like, I'm coming to this from the position of I didn't really play the originals back in the day. I played a bit of the remakes. That was kind of my first real exposure to these games, but I didn't complete any of them on the remaster.
We assumed
that came out. And,
Hard. I gotta say
hard.
That
they are really hard.
Yeah. They're hard games,
and this one is challenging too.
It gets there, hey.
Yeah. I'm really loving this. It's a lot of fun. It's got great level design. It's challenging in a way that still feels really. It still feels fair. Like there's segments that are pretty punishing, but the amount of checkpoints are dotted around so liberally that you're only, even in like a really hard bit, like you're only ever really trying to do that bit at one time. You know, it doesn't have that annoying thing where you die and then you've got to do this like whole huge stretch again. Like even if a bit is really beating your ass, it's only ever like that bit, which makes it feel a lot more manageable and just not as frustrating.
if you're playing on like the modern mode, but there is also a retro mode where it has lives, yes, and you restart the full level if you die, yes, too many times.
Now, pretend if you can that I didn't do the basic level of preparation for this show that you would expect that I would, and haven't seen any gameplay of this game and haven't played it yet. Are the levels linear? Is this an open world platforming game? How would you describe how this plays compared to the old ones?
Did you ever play the old ones?
I've played them recently.
Yeah, great. You get it. It's okay. Literally, they have followed up on those in a very faithful but sort of modernizing way, where there's things like you have this little kind of highlighted shadow under you when you jump that makes, yep, it clear where you're going to land. The thing with, mm-hmm, the lives being gone if you want. Everything, it feels like they've the difficulty doesn't come from it feeling archaic.
Right.
Yeah.
It feels, right, like a modern game, but it is a pretty straightforward, here's the set path, Crash Bandicoot style, you're walking towards or away or side by side of the camera at any point, mm-hmm, you know, it's mm-hmm, that, yep, style of corridory game.
Right.
Which I think was a bit of a complaint that some people had about the remakes, was that they looked great, but they were still very faithful to the originals, right down to some of the parts being challenging in kind of an unfair way. Like, a lot of the time you were dying due more to imprecision than due to just the sheer challenge of it. And so, right, I think they've clearly taken that and gone, okay, yeah, we're doing this one from scratch, so it's gonna feel modern and just challenging and not like a warts and all kind of, yeah.
Exactly. It maintains that same fucking really good look too. It looks amazing to me. Like,
yeah,
the animation, yeah, and the style of it is so distinct and bright and cool. Like, not cool in like a, you know what I mean by cool, it's good. But it's not going to fucking ride a motorbike, but it doesn't need to.
Although
Crash maybe will ride a motorbike in the game. Who knows?
Yeah, okay. So it's
not... Don't rule it out. That's one wacky bandicoot.
Is it wearing Oakley sunglasses and a floor-length leather trench coat or not?
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah.
When you open the case of the game, it punches a jukebox. Who cares about this road that we're going down?
Fonzie is
still to this day the coolest person who exists. Yeah, yeah, still, yeah, in
a guy who was he was cool in the 70s because he was pretending to be cool in the 50s.
Yeah,
and these days he's even cooler.
Yeah,
I don't think people would even know what Happy Days is who are listening to this show. I think
not in 2020,
chance.
Am I right? I ain't had one of them yet.
Oof.
But yeah. So it looks great. It sounds
looks incredible.
The part. It's got all the old sound effect, but done up, you know, the when you get the little mask guy, he goes hoodabaloo. It's got all that shit. You're breaking boxes. Yeah. It's counting how many boxes in the level you've broken. When you get to the end of the level, you're like, how the fuck did I miss two? I saw every part of the level. It's impossible that I missed two boxes. It's classic Crash Bandicoot for the modern
era. I'm having
the
opposite. I'm like, how did I miss 111 of these?
Crash Bandicoot should not work for a removalist service. He would completely fuck it up, or he'd either smash everything or he'd lose a bunch of boxes. And that's my new stand-up bit I'm taking to the stage after COVID.
Yeah, you're right. It looks, it's like a, yeah, beautiful 3D Looney Tunes cartoon. The level design gets better and better as it goes along. Like, there's like, so you're basically kind of going through time. So there's lots of creative kind of world design, and you have like an overworld map. So there's a there's like a sort of New Orleans-y style city. Then there's like an old kind of temple with dragons and stuff. There's like a Mad Max kind of world where there's a bit where you're being chased towards the screen by a big car, and you're in this sort of rolling ball cage thing. There's already been so many like different. There's a bit where you're in a bayou, and there's like a little delivery guy on a he's like a food delivery guy on a fan boat, and you're on the roof of it having to like destroy obstacles so that the fan boat can pass through. There's just so much interesting, creative design stuff in it, and some really nice little visual flourishes. you unlock these masks that give you abilities at certain points in some of the levels, which I guess is the big change from the originals. That are almost like, yeah, Mario style. Certain segments where you have this spin ability that means you can basically fly. There's one where you can slow down time. There's one where you can make things appear and disappear out of thin air. And there's also, I don't know if you got up to this bit, Nox, but there are, in addition to Crash, there are three other characters who you play as who you will, in the sort of linear sense, you'll play a level as them that you kind of have to complete to go on to the next one, and then you unlock that character and kind of a branching timeline through levels that you've already done. So there will have been a bit, for example, where when you've played through the level as Crash, like whatever, a bridge blows up randomly and, you know, Crash kind of looks at the camera and goes, oh, what was that? And then you can go back and play as one of the other characters and see how their story kind of intersects with that. So you basically play this other character and you see how what they've done has influenced the level that you've already played. It's kind of a neat touch, and it means that there's like little bits of, yeah, replayability in there. There's also nearly every level, I think, has a new skin that you can unlock for Crash if you get a set number of gems, which is just, there's so much stuff to find and collect. And I mean, for replayability and for bang for your buck, if you're someone who wants to get everything and collect all those things, it seems like they really have stuffed this absolutely full of content for you to go and look for and find and discover.
And that's the bit that, like, so I didn't really interact with that much. I don't think there's microtransactions in this at this stage, right?
I don't think it's asking you to
pay for these skins, but like Crash Team Racing was like that at first and then introduced it later on. Mm-hmm. And this has the feeling like it's going to do the same thing. Like, it's so weird to turn on a Crash Bandicoot game and scroll through 70 pages of legal documentation at the start and have to accept it. It's so weird. And it's doing the like kind of wacky music. And it's like, our lawyers will sue you if you don't agree to this or whatever happens. I've never. But that one element of it where it's like, sign up to the fucking Activision thing and we'll give you another Crash skin. Good for you. Irritated me a little bit, but it's not that big of a deal.
I think Tony Hawk had the same thing. I think that's kind of an Activision thing, isn't it? Tony Hawk had the exact same legalese that you had to scroll through, but with punk rock soundtrack underneath, which is arguably more jarring and out of place than
so
the
weird
tribal music of Crash.
To be like, Rage Against the Machine play, well, it's like, but also,
totally,
you are a part of this machine.
Follow up on Tony Hawk review, 100% at each section.
Whoa.
So that's good. It's a good game. And then I deleted it because I was like, well, I don't want to play multiplayer and I guess there's nothing here left for me, which is a personal thing. But I think once I ticked every box, I was out. But I literally ticked every box.
Wow. Get a load of the Birdman over here.
That's right.
Squawk, squawk, eh?
Oh, and also while we're on the issue of cosmetics and microtransactions, all that stuff in Star Wars Squadrons seems to be fine. You don't actually pay for anything. You accrue, you know, currency just by playing the game, and it's like colors for your ships and avatars and like fucking helmets and gloves and shit. But that's cool as well. There was a good amount of customizability. Also, mixing and matching body type, quote-unquote masculine and feminine body types, with masculine and feminine heads and voices was all interchangeable, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great.
Crash is good. It's if you aren't into those first ones, like, as much as they've modernized that gameplay to some extent, you're probably not going to think much of this either. It's really, even though it does have that variety to it and stuff, I think those sections are actually a little less fun than the regular platforming because, as you can imagine, they're a little less fleshed out. So it's always quite simple stuff, in my opinion, where, like, it's just about timing jumps while something moves. Or, you know what I mean? It's all a little kind of gimmicky.
You mean the masks thing?
No, the little events that will happen in the levels that are, like, you sliding down something or you riding some different vehicle or whatever.
Oh, yeah, sure, I see what you're saying.
The sort of non-platformy bits are... You know, but also they come and go so quickly, they're about the flash of it rather than it's not meant to be not that that excuses it not having gameplay as good as the regular one, but you get what I mean. It's another Crash game, which is cool, and they've done a great job of doing that. But yeah, again, if you didn't like those first three, guess what, brother? You ain't going to like these. That's what I reckon. Yeah.
3D platformer might be my favorite genre, and this is a really, really good example of one. I'm having a really great time with it. Yeah, I think it's there's so much creativity so far in the I think five worlds I've played, and yeah, I would say if you like 3D platformers, if you've never played a Crash game before, I would argue that this is maybe even the best place to start over the over perhaps even the remakes, because it does have that modernization and slight quality of life. Even little things like if you're repeated, I've noticed this a couple of times, and maybe this is something, I assume this is something you can turn off and on, but it's on by default. If you're dying repeatedly in one section, it'll chuck a little checkpoint in halfway through it, or it'll chuck a little mask in halfway through it after the, I don't know, fifth or sixth time, that's just there as a little extra little lifeline. So it never feels, you know, it never feels too overbearingly like this just isn't fun now. But
yeah. And it's got like a little story that kind of follows on from the others with like cartoony cutscenes, but it really, that stuff is so to the side and uninteresting that
it's incredibly stupid. Yeah, I mean, yeah. One of the characters that you, the, I think I said this when we talked about Crash Team Racing, the Crash Bandicoot extended universe, which, you know, I had no prior knowledge of until Crash Team Racing. Some of these characters. So there's one of the people that you play as in this game is a character called Dingo Dial, who is half dingo, half crocodile. And he's great. His sections are really great. It's this big fat guy with a vacuum cleaner
my running ears are around. Burning. But, but yeah, the whole clean it up.
The whole lore of him is very, very silly. You see him sitting in a bayou and his restaurant that he owns gets burnt down, so he decides, all right, I may as well go on a little adventure and torment Crash and his friends.
Yeah, the cutscene-y bits are almost border on annoying for me, where like compared to maybe that Ratchet and Clank remake where a bit of sort of fun,
yeah,
these just aren't funny or like that well made. They're fine, but
they're that real thing where they're animated very well, so they look like good cartoons, they look like,
right,
you know, a Pixar or a DreamWorks or whatever, but they're
sure
written by people who don't have a tenth of, you know, the skill with dialogue and stuff that those studios do.
I realized just then that I like Skinner Rat checked my phone because I was thinking about those cutscenes, and because I've been checking my phone during those cutscenes because I've been so bored by them, my brain triggered the same response just then. But they're not like detrimental to it or whatever. They're just what you'd imagine. Also, huge issue. This is the one big issue with this game and kind of the Crash series. They've never seen a Bandicoot. Whoever originally drew Crash Bandicoot had no. Yeah. They're not orange. They're not that shape. They do wear jorts, but other than that,
that's the one thing. Yeah, that's the one thing they got.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's true. They don't have. They're very quiet little creatures. They shy away from the spotlight. Literally.
Right. They look completely fucking different. This guy's just a fox or some shit.
He looks like Basil Brush.
It could just be a steroids. Surname. He doesn't necessarily have to be a Bandicoot. Yeah, he could just be a fucked up looking dude who loves John Cena.
Yeah.
And his last name is Bandicoot.
I don't like 3D platformers. My least favorite genre, I'm going to say. But I love the original Crash games. And the only reason I haven't played this is because A, I was playing the Star Wars Squadrons game. And B, all my other free time has been taken up playing Crusader Kings 3, which I cannot stop playing. I'm fully addicted. 3:30 a.m. the other night.
Wow.
It was a school night.
Have you taken over Europe yet?
No, but I've taken over Scotland and I'm moving in on England.
Wait, where are you from in this then?
I started in Scotland, in like the north of Scotland.
Sure. But you were just like a lord or whatever in Scotland and then you...
Yeah, like a duke or something. But like, it's such a free-flowing game where it's like you'll have two generations where your military focused. You're moving throughout, you know, the great British Isles, and then you'll die. Your son will be a fuckhead. He didn't learn anything as you raised him. Maybe because you didn't raise him right. You were focused on, you know, your wars of conquest.
There was so much venom in your voice when you said that the son was a fuckhead then. I can see how invested in this game you are.
And it's so frustrating because you spend so much time, like you will spend 3 or 4 hours.
You give and you give.
And then...
But this fucking kid...
And maybe like when you die, he's already like 23 years old and he's had time to develop relationships or not, you know, and like he'll, maybe everyone in your court hates this kid. Maybe they don't. Maybe sometimes they like him and it's great. But sometimes the leadership will change and you have to spend that whole generation just winning people back over. And all of those plans you had fully are on pause. But that's the kind of game it is, and sometimes you lose a war and you're like, oh, fuck, I'm back down to like a few counties and it's all starting again. But the game just keeps going. It's sort of like Civilization where it's like you will have bad generations, but it's not a lifetime. It is a history. It is about 1,000 years or something, or like, you know, maybe 800 years. It's great. It's really, really fun. I still recommend it to everyone as long as you have the time.
Yeah, it sounds sick. I really do want to jump in on it at some point.
But
as you can imagine, playing a game that will encompass the entirety of a history book, I know that I too will get sucked into that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's weird that knowing I will like something heaps will push me away from it, both in this game and in the relationships I try to maintain.
Just quickly before we wrap up for this week, to very quickly go back to something Crash Bandicoot related, I would like to encourage everyone to go onto the PlayStation Australia Facebook page and look back about a week and a half ago for a post that they made to commemorate the impending release of Crash Bandicoot 4 that was a throwback post to, in I believe, 1999, and it was them going, let's take a look back at when Crash Bandicoot visited Australia to promote the launch of Crash Team Racing on the PlayStation 1. And it is a bunch of like washed out old photographs of a man in a big old dank looking Crash Bandicoot costume just walking around the city. Like there's one shot that's him in a Blockbuster Video standing in front of a big poster for Notting Hill, just holding the DVD case and just pointing at it. And then there's like the cops pretending to arrest him and like stuff him into a case. It's awesome. It's a really, it is such an of its time post.
The Coles trolley, he's sitting in a trolley. My God. Yeah. Stretching against the Macca's sign.
This is sick. It's so good.
Arms Crash around Bandicoot. Police. Mm-mm. Mm-mm.
Crash Bandicoot wouldn't have visited Australia. He's from here, surely.
Yeah.
Yeah, they flew him out.
Yeah. Maybe that's why he looks so weird, because he was visiting friends and getting drunk with them the whole time he was back home.
Yeah.
He's like, fuck, I gotta go and fucking take photos in a fish and chip shop.
Oh, these are great photos. Thank you for bringing
this to our attention.
They're
really, really good. The Blockbuster Video one is fucking incredible.
Yeah. Is Crash and Pluck a Duck. Actually, I guess Pluck a Duck would have been done by 99.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it also looks like the suit looks like it was designed by someone who got described the appearance of Crash Bandicoot by someone who was in a real hurry and wasn't allowed to take notes and then had to go into their workshop and kind of just do it from memory. Like,
there's a great
making the suit like 2 steps removed from what a bandicoot looks
yeah.
like.
There's an awesome photo of him getting basically like poured into a harbour taxi in Sydney, I assume, where it's like he's barely in frame. The guy pushing him in is like got a full mullet. It's a great photo. This is awesome.
It's really
I bet there is a photo of Crash Bandicoot standing on top of Uluru that they decided not to repost. I bet there are photos from that tour that are, in retrospect, crook.
There is a photo of him with his arm around 2 cops.
That's a good one.
All crashes are bastards. Can you tell what city it is?
I think it's Sydney.
Yeah, okay. Whatever city. 90s Australian cops. Like, just write the word corrupt. It's shorter.
Good shit.
So there's a bit of homework.
Are we
going to
end every episode with like Tommy's meme corner now?
Yeah. Here's Crash Bandicoot with the Jackson Jive.
All right, let's wrap it up on Filthy Casuals for another week. Thank you very much for joining us. Go to filthycasuals.com.au. You can find the links to the Patreon where we do a bonus episode every week. We're currently doing the Filthy Casuals Guide to Life. We've got the premium episodes on our Bandcamp where we've got histories of franchises. We've got kind of I don't know, little flights of fancy topics. Mm-hmm. We've got heaps on there. We've done some film commentaries and stuff. Heaps of bonus stuff on there that you can get.
Yeah.
What else? We've got our Let's Plays on YouTube. So much stuff, but it's all at filthycasuals.com.au. Thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next time. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals.
And my suffer wing. Could be another one.
Yeah.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.